How long do they have to work?
Paleontologists, if they have a job, they work at least from 9 to 5. If they're students, they work almost as all the time they're awake. And if they have jobs and still have passion for what they do, they'll work for longer than 9 to 5. They'll keep their student hours.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Thomas Carr. I'm a PhD student at the University of Toronto, and my office is here at the ROM. And my PhD dissertation is a study of the evolution of Tyrannosaurus rex and its relatives. And it's my pleasure to walk you through the ROM galleries today. This is the Jurassic Gallery in the Dinosaur Hall. And this is a predation scene that shows two predatory dinosaurs that were quite abundant at the time. These animals were about 150 million years old. They lived in Western North America. The predators are called Allosaurus. They're the dominant predators at the time. They're about 30 feet long, smaller than T-Rex, but just as dangerous. The two of them are harassing or attacking a Stegosaurus, which was a plant-eating dinosaur. And Stegosaurus had a defense against animals like Allosaurus. And if you look at the tail, you can see there's four long spikes. And Stegosaurus would probably use that tail to lash out at predators like Allosaurus. Not all the plant-eating dinosaurs had protection like this. And if we look down at the right end of the gallery, we see a small bird-hip dinosaur called Camptosaurus, the bent lizard. And Camptosaurus is running away. And you can see that it has absolutely no defenses against the Allosaurus, which were bigger and probably more agile animals. So some dinosaurs relied on speed, and others relied on armor and spikes and things to defend themselves against the resident predators. Saurus is Greek for reptile or lizard, and most dinosaur names end in saurus. And a lot of modern-day reptile names end in the same way as well. Modern animals have technical names like Allosaurus. They often have, we usually call them by their common names, vernacular names, like green iguana. But the actual technical name, it usually has a Greek or Latin root. So Allosaurus means other lizard. Allo is Greek for other or different. So we have the different lizard or the other lizard. And Stegosaurus means the roofed lizard, which refers to the plates on the back. And the plates on the back look like they're weapons of some kind, but they probably weren't. It probably helped the animal cool down or warm up, and so it left its body exposed to attack. If we're lucky, we'll find a skeleton of a dinosaur that's complete altogether. It's happened on numerous occasions, so there's absolutely no question how the bones go together, although the details of how an animal moved has to be inferred, because most joints are cartilage, not bone. These animals, Allosaurus and Stegosaurus, are found in a bone bed. And a bone bed is an accumulation of bones. They're just broken up and scattered together. It's like a great big raisin bread of bones. And so you have to go through and put the animal together if you don't have a complete one to base it on. Mistakes do happen, but since we've been collecting dinosaurs for almost 200 years, we have a pretty good idea of how dinosaurs go together. There usually aren't many surprises, although it is challenging to identify a certain type of dinosaur from one bone, but the knowledge is secure enough to accurately put a skeleton together. Dinosaurs first appeared a long, long time ago, about 235 million years ago. Now, the earliest dinosaurs that have been found are about 225 to 230 million years old, but we know that there had to be some lead time up to their first appearance in the fossil record. So dinosaurs first appeared about the same time that mammals did, our own lineage. But the interesting thing that dinosaurs share in common with us is that they actually are still around. So there's a big, major group of... No, they're not lizards. Do you know what the living... Do you know what dinosaurs are alive today?
Birds.
Yeah, the birds. Little dinosaurs like Velociraptor and Troodon had full coverings of feathers over their bodies. And we know that because feathered dinosaurs, closely related to Troodon and Velociraptor, have been found in China. And so not all dinosaurs went extinct. And actually, dinosaurs are the most diverse animals alive today. There's about 10,000 species around. And they actually have outcompeted our own lineage in terms of numbers. There's a couple ways of getting at time. There's one technique called absolute timing, and that's when you find a dinosaur and there's rock either above or below the dinosaur. The dinosaur might be lying in rock that has the ash from a volcano. And volcanic ash is radioactive, so it's a little clock. And when it settles out onto the ground and is exposed to the air, that clock starts ticking. And when the rock starts ticking, it's at a constant rate. So if we look at different proportions of different types of elements, we can get a pretty good handle on the time, the actual time. There's another method called relative dating, and that's dating by the types of animals that lived, animals or plants that lived at a certain time. So we can go back to the Jurassic and take a look around at the types of animals that lived at that time. So we have Camptosaurus, Allosaurus, and Stegosaurus. If we go someplace else where we don't have the radioactive rocks, but we can identify the same types of animals, the chances are pretty high that we have animals from the same age, from the Jurassic, if we find animals like Camptosaurus, Allosaurus, and Stegosaurus. So there's absolute timing, which is dependent on radioactive rocks. They're like a little stopwatch. And relative timing, which is based on the types of animals and plants that you find in a certain area. Because we know enough about Earth life history to know what sort of animals lived at certain times all around the globe. Now that the relative dating isn't very accurate. We can only get sort of a general idea that it's Jurassic, which means it would have been between 205 and 144 million years. We can't narrow it down any more than that. We need the radioactive rocks to do it. Dinosaurs have been found on every single continent, including Antarctica. Actually, armored dinosaurs from Antarctica, flesh eaters, and other plant eaters. There are certain places that are unusually productive for fossils, like southern Alberta and outer Mongolia. It's not like that everywhere. For example, in New Mexico, where dinosaurs are found, the density is much lower. So you can search for days and days, and finding a fragment of bone will make your day. Whereas in Alberta, you find a fragment of bone everywhere you look, and your focus is more on finding the rare skeletons, the complete skeletons. So it's variable. Ontario, during the time of T-Rex, was a continent, was an island continent like Australia, and it had animals like ostrich dinosaurs, tyrannosaurs, and duckbills. It's probably a matter of time. And that continent extended all the way down to Georgia and Alabama, and so we know what sort of animals to expect, at least from the later part of the age of dinosaurs, if they ever turn up. My fingers are crossed. T-Rex sort of showed up, and then the curtains fell. T-Rex lived in rocks that were between 67 and 65 million years old. So at most, T-Rex was around for 2 million years, about twice as long as our own lineage has been around on this planet. But tyrannosaurs go all the way back to about probably 150 million years. That's the entire group of large, leggy, flesh-eating dinosaurs with the short arms and the two fingers on the hand, which is evidence of a discrete lineage or family of dinosaurs. And what's interesting about the fossil record of T. rex and its relatives is we only have probably the last quarter or third of that history. And T. rex in North America was the last of its kind, at least in Western North America, was the last of its kind.
How do you know where to put the bones? Shape.
The shape. Mm-hmm. Each bone in the body has a particular shape. And if the bones aren't crushed enough, we can actually tell by looking at certain features what bone is what. So if you look at Allosaurus's hand, see his claw, his thumb claw, is curved and sharp. And we know that only claws look that way. If you look at the upper arm bone, called the humerus, it doesn't have a sharp pointed end. It has a couple blunt ends and a crest on it. So each bone has a signature. And so generally, even from one bone lying on the ground, we can know exactly what it is and know where it goes in the animal's skeleton. So it's pretty easy once you start learning the rules of skeletons.
You're listening to Radio Free School on CFMU 93.3.
Yes, survival depends on a couple of things, optimal design and luck. And we live in a Darwinian universe, which is a cruel universe. And it seems that luck has a lot to do with survival. The lesson of evolution seems to be survival of the adequate. So you don't have these perfect animals that do everything right. And whatever happened, sort of survival is almost a big mystery as extinction is. It isn't really clear why some animals go extinct and others survive. It could be luck or it could be an advantage over other groups. And you really have to look at that on a case-by-case basis. It's difficult to generalize because most groups of living birds were already around during the Cretaceous. And it's hard to, if we want to find out how they survived, we have to look at each group individually. But even then, their fossil records aren't that good enough to get much of a handle on why they made it and others didn't. Because not all birds survived.
But maybe an asteroid hit the Earth and then it caused a giant tidal wave?
Well, there's no question that something did hit the Earth 65 million years ago, and it did cause a tidal wave, probably more than one. The question is did the asteroid, or whatever it was that hit the Earth, did it actually kill off the dinosaurs? And that's unclear.
Maybe it just hit the sea and then the whole kind of tidal waves came.
I agree with your suggestion. We actually know that the asteroid did hit water. It did actually hit the sea, and there's evidence for that from rocks that are in the southern U.S. What you have to keep in mind is that a tidal wave can only go so far and only hit so much land. So I'm sure tidal waves would have killed a lot of animals and plants in close to it. But the question is how did dinosaurs die out all across the world, and how did animals in the sea die out all?
Yeah, as well, because the continents were splitting up. So
they were?
So maybe the dinosaurs couldn't get the food they needed.
Yeah, that's actually has been suggested, that when the asteroid hit the Earth, it sent up dust into the atmosphere, and there's a blanket of clouds all around the globe that killed off the plants because they couldn't produce food from the sunlight that they eat. So the plant eaters would die out because they had no food. The flesh eaters would die out because they had no food. It's a possibility, but the evidence for it isn't very conclusive. Extinction is a big mystery, and sometimes it takes more than an asteroid to hit one part of the planet to knock everything out.
Yeah.
So if you think of it, a planet is much, much bigger than the asteroid that actually hit it.
Yeah.
which is probably no more than 6 miles across, that hit in what might be the Gulf, what would be the Gulf of Mexico today. So it's a very small particle hitting a very large planet. And could it really have such far-reaching effects? Some people think it did. Other people aren't so sure. I think your ideas are good, but
no one knows.
No one really knows for sure yet. People are still fighting about it. There's scientists that are fighting about it just a couple weeks ago. Paleontology is the science of extinct life, and the purpose is to document the processes and patterns of the history of evolution leading up to the present time, and excluding the present time. To become a paleontologist requires post-secondary education and a postgraduate degree in science, and that traditionally people have gone through geology, but there is now a trend toward people going through zoology and botany. Well, what's interesting, I guess, in Western culture is that dinosaurs have a big part, and they really have, sort of culturally, they have a good sales pitch. So kids are just bombarded with dinosaurs from a young age. So I basically bought the line, hook, line, and sinker. So I was first seduced by T-Rex when I was 2 years old and never looked back. So for some people it goes, you know, like me, way back to being a kid. And for other people, the interest will come later because dinosaurs and other extinct animals present interesting questions and represent mysteries that are intellectually appealing. So it's highly variable. Everyone has, a different story about how they became a paleontologist or what got them interested in the first place. But when I was two, that interest was purely impressionistic. You know, I had no concept until much later that there's actually such thing as paleontologists, that the knowledge about dinosaurs, people actually have to study the bones and figure the animals out. For me, like most kids, dinosaurs are sort of, you sort of take everything that's known about them for granted. So paleontology itself, I wasn't aware of until quite a bit later. There's something special about this duckbill back here. Usually with fossils, we just get bones. On rare occasions, we find things like feathers and skin and muscle. On this duckbill, these weird patches, that's fossilized skin. So what probably happened was this dinosaur died, the skin just completely dried out like dry leather, and then it was quickly buried. And somehow the skin was preserved, or at least these patches. And the other interesting thing about the skin is that it shows that duckbill dinosaurs had a frill along its back. They're decorated like a dress or a shirt. And these bumps are actually individual fringes that ran all along the back and down the tail. And a complete tail with skin was found in Montana that shows that those bumps go all the way to the end of the tail. So dinosaurs were very visual animals like people. We rely mostly on our eyes for the information we get from the world, mostly sight and sound. But sight is more important. And if you look at the eye openings in dinosaurs, eye holes of dinosaurs tend to be pretty big, which suggests that the eye itself was big. So they experienced their world in a way that was somewhat similar to ours. They're looking around. They didn't have the noses like a dog has. Like dogs get a lot of information from sniffing. Not dinosaurs, mostly eyes, and less so hearing. So a lot of dinosaurs have horns and frills and even little ornaments in their skin to communicate a lot of information to each other. What that information was is hard to tie down. But this is a rare fossil in that soft tissues are preserved with it. And there's a lot of animals living at the time of dinosaurs that we'd recognize. Those include, you know, turtles, birds. A lot of fish were similar, crocodilians, even small. Yep, amphibians were around as well. Frogs had their start in the Jurassic, and they were around by this time, the Cretaceous. So it was, in some ways, an exotic world, but in others, quite familiar. If you took the dinosaurs out of the picture, we'd probably think we were in the southeastern U.S. It wouldn't have been that different, at least superficially. But then you start to try and identify the animals that you're looking at, and you will not find any living species back then. It's completely different fauna, but superficially the same. Let's take a look at T-Rex, because the answer's in the bones. When we take a look around at the world today, we don't have to look, not just in dinosaur galleries, but when we take a look at the animals living today, we notice that some animals look similar to each other, more similar to each other than they are to others. There's no question in anyone's mind that a domestic house cat is more closely related to a tiger and a lion than it is to a polar bear, and a polar bear is more closely related to other bears than it is to dogs. The similarity shared between these groups of animals is actually evidence of common descent. The similarity is inherited from one single common ancestor, which speciated, basically split into daughter species through time, producing incredible diversity of similar animals. If we take a look at the skeleton of T-Rex, we can actually trace part of the evolution of birds. Starting with dinosaurs, they walked on their hind legs, and the legs were directly under their body. That's a feature that unites all dinosaurs. The first dinosaur had that feature. Flesh-eating dinosaurs, at least advanced ones, walked on three toes. Living birds kept that evolutionary novelty. And you can take a look at a pigeon, and it walks on three toes. Why does it have three toes? Because the recent common ancestor of flesh eaters evolved that feature. And generally, you keep evolutionary changes. You don't get rid of them. It's hard to get rid of things. Tyrannosaurus rex, like other advanced, even more advanced flesh eaters, have a relatively short tail. Birds have ridiculously short tails. They took this trend to the extreme. The bones of flesh-eating dinosaurs are hollow. Bird bones are hollow. And even more, a lot of bones are hollowed by air sacs that actually penetrated the backbone, so there's a lot of depressions and holes in the vertebrae, the bones that make up the backbone, that are caused by air sacs that extend from the lungs. Birds inherited that from an ancestor that was a non-flying, flesh-eating dinosaur. Virtually every feature that we think of as typical of birds evolved in flesh-eating dinosaurs. So that includes short tail, bipedality, walking on the three toes, feathers. You know, feathers were in things like Velociraptor. The wishbones are actually one of the most primitive features for flesh-eating dinosaurs. Wishbones aren't unique to birds. Even T-Rex had a wishbone. T-Rex probably didn't have feathers. From what unpublished evidence there is, we know that they probably had scales. So feathers came a bit later during bird evolution. So we can actually walk up the ladder of evolution in the body of a single animal. And so if you actually think of humans, it's a no-brainer that we're primates. You know, we tend to have big brains. We're African apes. We don't have tails. And we're also hominoids because we walk upright. So we actually know that we belong to these successively bigger groups of animals. But it doesn't end there. The significance of feathered dinosaurs is that birds are literally dinosaurs. You can't undo your history. So even though birds were around at the same time as other non-flying dinosaurs, the evidence is that they evolved from other flesh eaters, and so they still belong in this bigger group because we have more primitive members of that group. So there isn't a time problem there at all. The history of a group of animals is literally written into the skeleton. And if you think about it, not only are birds literally dinosaurs, not only are humans literally primates, dinosaurs and humans also belong to a group called vertebrates, backboned animals. So we share this vertebral column that we inherited from a recent common ancestor that evolved at least 500 million years ago. So we belong to this even bigger group. It's like a basket within a basket within a basket, although you get baskets taking off in their own direction, if that analogy works. And birds look superficially very different from a T-Rex because the whole front end of their skeleton, and well, most of their skeleton, has been modified for flight. So at first glance, they look like radically different animals, but the similarities, that common history, is in the details.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Movie Reveal.
Hello, my name's Evelina.
And my name's Madeline.
And we're going to talk about
Magic School Bus.
Magic School Bus.
A bus of sorts.
A bus of sorts.
Well, they're at this dig place. And people are digging, and they're digging for dinosaurs. They're with this lady, the teacher's friend. The teacher is not the school teacher is not an ordinary teacher. The bus changes into all these sorts of things. So
dinosaurs. Yeah, it changed into two different kinds of dinosaurs, but it's not exactly completely a dinosaur. It's like sort of has like the head of the dinosaur, and then but it's still a bus, so they can still sit in it. First they turn into a Parasaurolophus, I think I'm saying it right, I hope I am. And then next they changed into a Triceratops.
They nearly got eaten. Like, by T-Rex chased them.
Yeah, and there was Troodons. And so when the Troodons came, then they Then Miss Frizzle had this invention she made. She gave them, and it's called Tricera Shields, because the meat eaters don't really want to get hurt, because they don't want to fight, because they don't want to get hurt. Triceratops have three horns on their heads, and so to defend themselves, and so they get away. And they protect the babies. They keep the babies in the middle, and the parents are on the outside.
They go for the babies.
The Troodons don't go for the adults. They go for the babies. Mm-hmm.
For the babies. But the T-Rex probably goes for every sort of
as long as they're
dinosaur.
Not his size.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the T-Rex doesn't really, like, want to get hurt either. And so they made Arnold as big as the T-Rex, and then he fought the T-Rex. He didn't even have to fight the T-Rex. He just had to scare him by talking. They went past the Ice Age.
They
went, like so far back in time. Mm-hmm. And they went into the Late Cretaceous.
Yeah. And this is how it all started, the way they got chased by the T-Rex. So there's a girl in the class called Phoebe, and there's a boy called Arnold. And Miss Frizzle, their teacher, found a dinosaur egg. And they went to the dinosaur age. Phoebe asked to look at the egg. And then dinosaur crept up on them in these bushes kind of things. And then grabbed the egg and started to run. And then Phoebe ran after it. And then Arnold...
An Orthomimus, it was called.
And,
the dinosaur is called an Orthomimus.
Then Arnold ran after Phoebe, and then he said something like, come back, thief.
Come back with my egg, you thief. It doesn't belong
to you. It doesn't belong to me either.
So you went to the ROM yesterday,
yeah,
right?
We saw the dinosaur bones. We saw the T-Rex's
And they
bones.
Even had some fossilized skin on some of the
dinosaurs.
On a duckbill dinosaur, a Mosasaurus. And apparently they said they got these T-Rex bones, but nearly had all its skin, but the people that were digging it up didn't treat it very, very much respect, so most of the skin got lost.
Yeah.
So they must have been really angry and upset.
they lost all their skin.
Dinosaur Provincial Park, we really, really want to go there.
Yeah.
Why?
Because there's so many dinosaur bones.
In some places, you can't even walk without treading on dinosaur bones.
It's in Canada. Alberta.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.